This is an interview with Mr. Earn Compton of Louisa, Kentucky. This interview was conducted by Edward McCurley for the Kentucky Oral History Commission on July 14, 1978. This interview was conducted at Mr. Compton's newsstand in Louisa. What year were you born?
1905. Now don't ask me how old I am like they do on this damn Social Security. Go into the hospital and they go out and fill out a paper. How old are you? When was you born?
What was Louisa like when you moved here?
Well, I moved here in 1960. Mother and Dad. Louisa was a solid, it was in November, and Louisa was a solid mud all over town. Of course, there were some places where the water holes were drained out, but nevertheless, it was pretty well mud. We had a fairly amount of sidewalk, not too many. But we had some. I went to school up here to Louisa Elementary School, which was built in 1880. What's happened there, Ben?
Nothing happened.
Built in 1888. Now, the oil boom was on here then, just like the coal boom's on this part of the country now. And they used to haul these machinery with on wagons pulled by oxen. Four yoke of oxen would make up a team, and they'd load up a boiler on one wagon, they'd load up the drilling outfit on another wagon, and they'd load up the pipe on another wagon, and then they'd load up all the spare tools on another wagon. They'd have four or five wagons heading out towards a new oil well where they drilled. They drilled down about 1,800 feet and hit. Well, they're still producing. A lot of them are oil. Then it was in 1919, we had fires. July 19, 1919, the LeBaco Company, Louisa Baking and Bottling Company up here, it's called LeBaco Company. Burned the bakery down. Well, that was in July, and in November they went to work right the next day after it burned down, cleaning up and building back, and in November they opened it up. Now, the year I came here, in 1918, that summer, they had two bad catastrophes around here. Out here at what we call Five Forks, which is about 4 miles out in the country, they had a nitroglycerin storage house. And one fellow was out there to get some, and it blowed up on him. It exploded. For some reason or another. And they never did find anything but maybe a little piece of horse flesh or something. Then about that same time, in the summer of 1918, the Chesapeake and Ohio was building, extending their yards down at Ashland, making larger yards for cars. And we had two crews from here, went down there every day. And on this Sunday morning, the two crews loaded up on two motor cars. One was in R.A. Tabor's, was one of the foremen, and I'm not just exactly sure who the other one was. But anyhow, there wasn't supposed to be any trains coming. They got out here in Buchanan, and they met a loose engine. And plowed into both of them. They were running pretty close together. Some of the boys jumped, and some of them got killed. Several of them got broken bones. So that evening, the passenger train went up. Or maybe they brought them up on that engine. I don't know how exactly how they got them here. I didn't see it because I wasn't here at that time. And they turned the C&O Depot into a morgue up there. And a fellow by the name of Frank Pig was in the undertaking business. And he went up there and prepared them all to be buried. And he got one of our local fellows here to help him, that he knew. And they got everybody ready that day so that they could take them home in their caskets. Now, those were two catastrophes that happened here just before the same year I come here in. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, 19 and 19. On or about, in sometime in the early summer, let's say May, maybe June, they started plowing up, paved the street. Well, they started right out here in front of what the present fire department is. Mm-hmm. And they came down to this corner here, main cross, and went up, turned to the right, and went up to Madison Street. There they turned both ways. I went towards the bridge and went towards the public school. Well, when they got bad weather come and they had to quit, they had paved, blacktopped. They used what they called a Kentucky rock asphalt. It was a black dirt, black stuff. Mm-hmm. And they rolled it. They put down about eight or 10 inches of good sized rock, and then put dust over top of it. Then they put this about an inch and a half of Kentucky rock, brought up rock asphalt. And of course they had a big steam motor and rolled it down. A fellow by the name of Zeb Heston operated that steam roller. And by golly, don't you know that old fella could just take that thing and just make that street right on the right grade. It was a sight of the world. What a wonderful job he did. But Lord, that was 1920. That's been, 58 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they got the streets to throw all the pieces. Now, shut that off of me.
You mentioned about an explosion, and you also talked about fire. What kind of fire protection did Louisa have then?
Well, ready?
Yeah.
Going back to the fire that we had up at the LeBaco Company, well, we had a cracker jack of the fire department. We had so many feet of 4-inch holes on two wheels. And two fellows would take and grab that, kept over at City Hall. Two fellows, we had two rolls of them, I think, maybe three. And about 100 feet on each roll. So when we had a fire, some of the boys would come down and grab these carts. And away they go. And let me tell you something. We got a big reservoir up on the hill, and by cracky, we had a water pressure that wouldn't behave. It took two real men to handle those one set of hoses.
Uh-huh.
And by cracky, we could really throw the water, but uh, We didn't get a fire engine in here till about 1925, about that time. American Legion was the firemen, the boys in World War II, World War I, rather. They were the firemen, and they, I don't know how we got paid for the fire department. But anyhow, we had an old Dodge 24-25 model truck, and that was your fire wagon, and that hauled the hose, and we had a pump on it to where we could take it out there and pump it in, lay it in the creek and pump water out to fight the fires fast.
Uh-huh.
That was until we had that fire truck by cracky up until for 20-some years, maybe 25. I don't know when we got that first major fire truck. We've had, now we got two over here now, big ones. But I don't know, they haven't had tackled very many fires, I don't think, that is, very big fires.
Mm-hmm.
Like this Lubeco fire, or like J.T. Jess's Lumber Company, when it burned in August, July or August of 1930, that was a lumber yard, and it burned up a house or two around down in the general area, besides the lumber yard. In 1918, 1919, and 1920, the Lubeco Company up here was doing a whale of a business. They had the pop factory and they had the ice plant to put it in the winter, I mean in 1920. And they'd ship boxcars full of pop, boxcars full of ice up the river into coal fields. And then, of course, every day nearly, they had two trains. Every day they would ship a whale lot of bread by express. Now, they also went into the coal fields up in the Williamson area, Pond Creek up in Pike County, over on that side of the mountain. And they'd spot a car over there, the N&W would, and they'd fill it full of bread. Then the passenger train, number four, come along, pick it up, take it up to that area, and distribute it out. Mm-hmm. And they used to ship pop, and they used to ship ice bikes. Shipped ice by express all the time because it melt pretty fast. Those blocks of ice they made the ice right up here. Building still stand, but it's had all that pipe, all the ice mechanism taken out. Mm-hmm. However, they got one room up there that's really well insulated. Where then the Velvet Ice Cream Company up at Chillicothe used to send a whole raft of ice cream down here, and it unloaded over at Fort Gay, and they'd bring it over here and put it in this ice storage room, and then they'd ship it up the river as it was needed. Mm-hmm. That was in 1920 overall. About 1898, Louisa got gas throughout the town. Don't know exactly what the rate was, but I can remember back, that's been over 25 years, when gas was 32 cents a thousand. The minimum bill was 50 cents. Then they've been raising it ever since. Now that was in 1898. We had gas street lights here. Mm-hmm. And we had an old gentleman by the name of Albert Murray, who was a light tender. Turned them up every morning. I mean, every evening, turned them down every morning. At that time, he delivered Cincinnati Times star. But anyhow, he took care of the lights. Then about 1924-5, George Vincent and Tom Hodge put an electric plant up here. I think Drew Burchett was in one. And they wired the town for electricity. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wired it, and some people didn't. Lights and electric cars. About electric cars, about the only thing they had then. And lights. Then they put in the street lights then. I forget how much of light. Anyhow, they went to, the town went broke and couldn't pay it. So they turned it off. In about 1931, 32, they turned the juice off. Well, we elected a women's council here in 37. And one of the first things they done after they got in was make arrangements to get the lights turned back off. Mm-hmm. So along sometime in 38, or maybe early 39, we got the lights all turned back on all over town. Water plant. I forgot that guy's name that put the water plant in. He put it in up here on at the foot of Franklin Street. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that thing's still standing or not, is it, Ben?
What?
Up there by the parking lot back of the hospital.
Yeah.
It's the old set of steps that was covered over down into the river are still there. And they put a wooden aqueduct or pipeline from there to the top of the hill where they had a big reservoir dug up there just like a big basement. Mm-hmm. That's where we got that powerful water from.
I see.
They done that in about 1905, along about 1905 or 6. Then about 1915, they put the moved the water plant up to where it is now. They made their own electricity. Mm-hmm. And pumped their water, see there.
Yeah.
And that was run by a man by the name of G.W. Ackerson. And he took it over, bought off this fellow. And he run it for several years till he died about 1926 or 7 or 8, long in there. And then a fella was appointed administrator of it by the name of Markham. And he run it a few years. And then there's some water company up in Philadelphia bought it.
See.
And they owned it, operated it, till the city bought it about, about 30 years ago, about that long, about along the late 30s, early 40s, the women, late 40s, or early 50s, I think about it in the late 40s. 47, 8, 9, long in there. And C.T. Britton was the mayor at that time, Charlie Britton, senior. And now, in 1978, they are rebuilding this water system here.
I see.
They got 4 big tanks up on the hill. I don't know how much water they hold, but they hold a whale of a lot. But our old pipes are kind of corroded up with stuff, and they haven't got much pressure. Mm-hmm. Right here at the store, why, get out there with the hose and go to washing down your front, and the water will just plumb quit. They've got the streets in a lot of mess there, but maybe one of these days we'll get them fixed up and so it won't be so aggravating. Shut it off.
I'd like to know how a women's council got in to run in the city, because that seems to me to be a little bit unusual. Usually men have been involved in politics.
Well, now, I'm no politician. All I'm doing is just giving you facts.
Oh, no, I know that, but...
How they got in office, the people elected them.
Well, it surprises me that they were even able to run, because most of the time, women have had a hard time getting elected to public offices. Well, that's okay.
Well, let me see here now. Going back to the women's city council, one's still living that I know of. Mm-hmm. They elected four, and then they elected two men, Clyde Daniels and Aiden T.C. Now, all this took place, I think, in 37. And neither one of them would serve. Uh-huh. Now, the women that were elected, as far as I know, there's just one living. That's Noble Wellman. She lives up over at Sears and Roebuck store. Barry Hayes. Rose Benson. And Fanny Moore were the four women that served, were elected and served. And Hez Moore, H.K. Moore, was appointed in the place of Aiden T.C. Now, Clyde Daniels, nobody ever appointed for his place. I don't guess he resigned, but he never did take any part in the running of the city. They not only put the lights back in town, but they built, tore down the old city hall, which was a two-story, and built the present city hall. Now, the fire department over there built 1970. The present water company office is where the fire department used to be when they had one engine. And they converted that into a water company office. Mm-hmm. And it's a classic one. I don't know what it costs, but it costs one pretty penny. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the job I ever had was carrying water for a steam shovel outfit. Quarter day. Then I worked in a grocery store. During World War II, I worked in a pop factory, and I worked in a drug store delivering drugs to the various, the doctors would call the prescriptions in, and then I'd have to take them to the houses on bicycle. That was all down in Portsmouth, Ohio. And then one time down there, I worked for Harrison Walker's brickyard. Worked 8 days. They had a special amount of bricks, certain size bricks to get out, and about four or five of us boys got jobs there. Mm-hmm. Made $3 a day. Man alive, worked 10 hours a day. And then when I came up here, I used to sell sandwiches and lunches at the depot on the trains when they came in. There's always plenty of people traveling up and down the river every day, seven days a week. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall of 1920, November 3rd, I lost my sight. Mm-hmm. And from that time on, had a little rough life. But one of the first things I went to selling after I attended the school down at Louisville, Kentucky School for the Blind, I went to sell brooms. The brooms and whisk brooms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I used to sell chances on turkeys and chances on turkeys and hams, and that made me a few dollars. Uh-huh. Shut it off.